few moments, we will light our candles together. Before we do, I have a few thoughts to share with you. Last Sunday, I suggested that this age-old story, which Bob just read for us, has kept its power over the years and centuries for many reasons that include and go well beyond its being one of the central stories or legends of the Christian faith. It brings together so many things: beauty and simplicity, mystery, wonder, awe, fantasy, and reality. All of these things come together, elements come together in the legend of the birth of Jesus. And I further suggested last Sunday that the image of the infant Jesus is one that can put us in touch with some of the most basic aspects of our own humanity. For the infant is at once helpless and frightened and vulnerable, even at the same time possessing all the hope and the promise and the possibility that we see in all newborns. And that is us, all those things. We do feel at times helpless or frightened or vulnerable in the face of many of the fallen parts of our world, in the face of war and injustice and want and need. And we feel at times helpless or frightened or vulnerable in the face of some of the fallen, some of the unhealed parts of our own lives. And yet at the same time, we carry within us the hope and the possibility and the promise that it is within our power to accomplish something when it comes to restoring at least some measure of peace to the broken parts of our world, some measure of wholeness to our lives. For being a helpless and a vulnerable infant, while real enough, was not the last word on who Jesus was or on who he came to be. And neither do our occasional feelings of helplessness or vulnerability have to be the last word on who we are and who we may be either. And that's the message of hope that I take from this age-old story. For like all stories, like all good mythology, it is the story of who we are and who we may yet be. And there's another New Testament passage I find meaningful at this time of year that I want to spend a couple of minutes with. It's in the opening words of the fourth gospel of the New Testament. That's the Gospel of John. Now, this gospel was written many, many years after those other three were. And it was written as a new religion had already sprung up in Jesus' name, not even yet called Christianity. And it was starting to spread beyond the land where Jesus had lived and had his ministry. So the Gospel of John begins on a different kind of a note. It's aimed at the larger Greco-Roman world out there beyond the land where Jesus lived. And in this version, there's no baby Jesus, no Mary, no Joseph, no shepherds, no angel, no magi, none of the above. First time we see Jesus in this gospel is he's an adult getting ready to be baptized. The story of his life begins with the words, "In the beginning was the Word." And it goes on in a rather ethereal vein until it comes to a verse that goes, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us." Now, for the people in that larger world beyond the land of Jesus who read this, in that world, the Word meant this realm of the ideal, which they believed existed somewhere up above this so-called real world that we live in. So instead of giving them a story that was outside the world of the land of the people who lived where Jesus had lived, the writer of the Gospel of John decided to speak their language instead. And he said, "Look, these ideals, these highest human values you're always aspiring for, actually got real in a real human being. You don't just have to contemplate about human ideals, helpful as that may be to do, but you can see these ideals actually lived out in an actual human being. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us." Now, the classical Christian interpretation of this passage is that Jesus was the incarnation of God, the in-the-flesh version of the divine, the embodiment of the ideal for the godly. And that's a position that I admire and I respect, even as it is one that I bring my own humanistic twist to make it work for me. It works for me as a personal challenge. And it's a challenge I'd like to put before you on this silent night and this holy night. How in my life, how in your life, can and must the Word become flesh? How does the Word, or the ideal of a world at peace, a world free from want and hunger, A world where all the human family can live out lives of hope and meaning. A world in which the divine spark we each and all possess is lived out to the fullest. Well, the only way these things will happen is when the Word of hope and peace and justice and wholeness, becomes incarnated in the lives we live from day to day, week to week, year to year. I hope you'll think on these things and act on these things in the days and weeks and years ahead. And I'd like to close these thoughts by going back to the story we heard. I'm linking that story up with some words by a former minister of this congregation from the late 1940s. I know I've used them before, but they bear hearing again. The late Reverend Ernest Sommerfeld wrote them. He said, "Why do you celebrate Christmas? You may not believe Jesus was a deity. You probably don't believe in actual angels. True. But we believe in songs, which are born in the hearts and minds of people. We believe that some stories deserve to live forever because of what they tell us about ourselves. The angels singing an anthem of peace desire to be heard forever because there are angels in human hearts. The humble shepherds who have ears to hear and hearts to receive a message of joy, deserve to live to the end of time. The Magi, so faithfully seeking the way of a star, deserve to go in search each year as long as years shall be. They are the story of the quest for ourselves." I hope you'll recall the stories of this season and sing its songs as a way of calling yourselves the very best that was in you. And as you light your candles this morning, actually the Lang family will come and stand before me at this time. As you light the candles and pass that light from one person to another, I'm going to ask that you let that light symbolize the Word being made flesh in your life and commit yourselves to carrying forth the ideals that it represents. So Craig, Korea, can you come forward, please? Choir's going to sing Dona Nobis Pacem, Give Us Peace. If you're sitting on my right, sing with the choir who will be standing over here. If you're on my left, sing with the choir who will be standing on my left. If you're in the balcony, members of the choir will be joining you up there as well.